Today is Friday, March 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
The Women in Public Service Project has an incredibly simple mission, that we want women to hold 50% of leadership positions at decision-making tables across the globe.
That's Gwen Young, director of the Wilson Center's Global Women's Leadership Initiative and Women in Public Service Project. We'll have this story and more stories on women empowerment as we celebrate International Women's Day today. Also ahead, fear and insecurity could rise for migrants in Italy, and tension rises as British Army vets may face prosecutions for the killings that occurred 47 years ago, known as Bloody Sunday. It's all on today's International Edition. While mayors and social workers in the southern Italian region of Calabria say the Italian government's recently adopted security decree, which abolishes 2 years of humanitarian protection for asylum seekers, will do nothing but create greater insecurity. They say migrants not only helped repopulate empty classrooms, but brought new work to locals. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
Caulonia, Stignano and Riace are just some of the towns in Italy's southern and depressed region of Calabria that had benefited from the arrival of migrants on Italian shores. But for the many who arrived here after difficult sea crossings, there are new uncertainties. A security decree recently approved by the Italian Parliament has eliminated the possibility of obtaining humanitarian protection for 2 years, and allowing migrants to stay legally on Italian soil. Some mayors have gone so far as to openly announce they were refusing to implement the decree. Katie Belcastro is the mayor of Caulonia, an ancient city on the Ionian coastline. She says her town and others in Calabria welcome the migrants in a spirit of solidarity and humanity. 10 years ago, she added, "We saw this also as an opportunity to help these people while at the same time revitalizing our centers." She says the town physically opened its doors, its houses, to the many migrants who flee their countries because of fratricidal or religious wars, hunger and poverty. They flee in search of a better world. "The people of Calabria opened their arms to people in need," she said, insisting that integration had worked very well, with many migrants marrying locals. Rosy Caristo is a 27-year-old social worker from Stignano, who says young people living here in recent years have chosen to stay because they were able to find work helping migrants and jobs that did not exist in the past. She said migrant children helped communities stay alive. In Stignano, Caristo says, schools were going to close down. Thanks to the migrant children, we were able to keep classes going. The numbers in the classrooms grew, she added, thanks to the children of migrants. Caristo said the aim of their social programs was to help migrants become autonomous, initially assisting them with schooling or learning Italian, with housing and finding a job. Mayor Belcastro said there has never been an issue with violence from migrants, but she is convinced that the new decree will generate greater insecurity on the territory. She says the dismantlement of the system of humanitarian protection will no doubt increase insecurity, because the people who will no longer enjoy these rights will be out on the street, and this will lead to an increase in fear and insecurity of citizens. The social worker said that thanks to the migrants, so many windows of homes that were always closed in town were opened again. She said the migrants are a great resource for those towns. She voiced her unhappiness with the new decree and was even more pessimistic than the mayor. Caristo says that in her opinion the situation is dramatic, as she cannot see any positive side to the new laws. She added that she believed the country is destined to go backwards 20 years. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Calabria, Italy.
Thank you, Sabina. Well, concerns are growing that new measures at the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, if Britain leaves the EU, will increase historical tensions. Northern Ireland is part of Britain, but a large Catholic minority has sought to unite it with Ireland to the south. Now officials are voicing concerns because of issues related to Britain's withdrawal from the EU, known as Brexit. After Brexit, the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland is likely to become hard, meaning new security measures and checks will be put into place. Experts worry this will increase tensions at a time that developments related to a mass shooting involving the British military and unarmed civilians are going forward. Well, Venezuela now faces widespread loss of electricity as the country's leadership crisis continues. Power outages took place in most of the country's 23 states starting yesterday. The power outages continue today. The capital, Caracas, also lost power. Large crowds of commuters were forced to walk home because the city's metro system was shut down and few buses were available. Venezuelan officials say the hydroelectric station at the Guri Dam, one of the world's largest, was sabotaged but offered no evidence. Well, today marks International Women's Day, and women all over the world are celebrating this year's theme that focuses on innovative ways in which women can advance gender equality and the empowerment of women, particularly in the areas of social protection systems, access to public services, and sustainable infrastructure. In Zambia, women smallholder farmers have been empowering themselves to grow more nutrient-rich crops that will improve the health of their families. They are also introducing crops that are adaptable to the effects of climate change. Biofortified crops play a crucial role during the child's early periods of growth. Emily Mwale Banda is the assistant country manager for Harvest Plus in Zambia. She spoke with me about the vital role women play in fighting micronutrient deficiencies through a biofortification program initiated by Harvest Plus.
Women farmers are actually keen to have their household healthy, because if their families are not so healthy, they will not be as productive as they should be. So introduction of high micronutrient crops have actually been received with positive attitude by the women, and so they are participating in growing besides the other crops that they've been growing for their home consumption.
What are some of these crops?
In Zambia, they grow maize, beans, pumpkins, for both the fruit and the vegetable, the green leaves. Some of them also grow cotton, soybeans, cassava, because of the volatile rain seasons that we have. And cassava is actually more resistant to drought than the maize. So most of the households now are also growing cassava, so that if the maize does not produce as expected, they would actually lean on cassava crop.
How important is it that women use biofortified crops as opposed to giving their children supplements?
In Zambia, which is also common in the rest of Africa, is that health centers are actually sparsely located. And some women in the most rural areas, they are unable to access the medical services where they can actually receive some supplements. And it's only the 6 months to 5-year-old children that are able to access that assistance from the government. The rest of the children are actually dependent on what is grown and consumed in the house.
What role do women play in making decisions regarding using the biofortified crops?
A rural woman has a very big role in what is supposed to be consumed in the house, because when she learns of something that would actually improve the nutrition and health of the household, she actually extends her hand to grow it. Because rural women in Africa, most of them do not own land of their own, so they request for permission to be given a portion for them to grow the crop that will be actually good for the family. With the man, he can even decide to grow tobacco. he can decide to grow a cash crop which may not be so beneficial for the house. But the woman will try by all means to have something that would be beneficial to the household. The role a woman in the rural area plays in actually adopting into growing the biofortified crops is by actually linking up with fellow women. They learn the benefits that they are able to get from there and share with their husband so that the husband can have a buy-in and accept that crop to be grown by them in their farms.
And how successful are they in doing this?
So far, where we have introduced the vitamin A orange maize in Zambia, it has been accepted everywhere, including men. They've actually accepted it. In other parts of Africa where we have the sweet potato like Uganda, and some of it has been introduced in Zambia, women have also taken a big role in actually growing it because it is a crop that is regularly eaten as a breakfast meal in houses.
And how important is it for the health of the child to be eating this particular biofortified crop?
It is very important because more than 90% of Africa, for children who are under 5, they have high levels of deficiencies. And so introducing crops that are actually high in vitamins and minerals, it is helping a lot of women and their families to have access to crops that will be eaten regularly and improve their health in their homes.
That was Emily Mwali Banda, Assistant Country Manager for Harvest Plus in Zambia. She spoke with me from Lusaka. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. President Donald Trump drums up anti-socialist sentiments in his battle for re-election in 2020. South Korea's president replaces his unification minister as part of a larger cabinet reshuffle. And the Trump administration vows to aggressively counter Tehran efforts to destabilize the Middle East. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists theorize the sun will begin to die in about 5 billion years when it expands into a red giant. 5 billion years later, the sun is expected to exhaust the last of its nuclear fuel, leaving behind its small, dense, and hot core, which is called a white dwarf. Once the white dwarf completely cools, trillions of years later, our sun will become a cold and lifeless object known as a black dwarf. Astronomers from England's University of Warwick say that data from the European Space Agency's Gaia satellite provided them with direct evidence that white dwarfs form crystal cores of metallic oxygen and carbon. The researchers say this crystallization slows down its aging process, lengthening the time before it would become a black dwarf. A study outlining the research and findings has been published by the journal Nature. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
As we continue with our International Women's Day themed show today, International Edition's Lori London talks with Gwen Young, director of the Wilson Center's Global Women's Leadership Initiative and Women in Public Service Project, which was founded by U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in 2011, about women in leadership in 2019.
The Women in Public Service Project has an incredibly simple mission that we want women to hold 50% of leadership positions at decision-making tables across the globe. So the premise is we want women who are about 50% of the population to sit at every sort of level of government leadership. And the why that's important is partly it's just based on we are 50% of the population and using the full talents of your population. There have been some studies as recently as this year that when women lead in government, GDP grows by about 6% or there's better health of communities when women are leading. There are studies in the corporate sectors that show that diverse boards that include women and others will produce higher profits, better returns, more creative solutions to problems. So So there is a sort of business and evidence case. There's the case that why not use half of your population? In government, there's a case of you would like your government to be representative of the people that you serve. And women access government services and live in these communities, so should have a say in what they do, which comes out of maybe a human right or it's the right thing to do.
How much of a disparity is there right now within the population of women versus how many are actually in those roles?
Overall, let's say in parliaments, congresses across the globe, women are about 22% of those parliaments. So there's a huge disparity globally in parliament. The place where women in government are doing the best is civil service, where women are about 43% of civil service employees, and they're 29% of leadership. The reason they're doing better there is there's more women in the civil service globally, and there's also more women in leadership positions in the civil service globally. So what you'll notice is where we are the best in government at 43%, we're still not at 50%. We're still not at what the population represents, how many women are. Women are coming out in undergraduate and master's programs in the 50 to 60% of those classes are women, but it varies, right? There are like 13 ministers of defense and ministers of foreign affairs who are women across the globe, so very low percentage. So the best is civil service at 43. The figure most people use in terms of politics is women in congresses and lower houses of parliament, 22%. So we're not even a quarter.
Is there a country that is doing the best at having women in those roles? Where does the U.S. stand?
So the U.S. stands in terms of sort of our index, which measures women in the five sectors of government, local and nationally, stands in a place that we call flat parity, where women don't rise very high and where women aren't across all five sectors of government. So we technically don't rank the countries per se, but the country that sort of scores the best, if you will, the top three are Sweden, Canada, and Finland. What that means when you're at that achieving parity is that women are reaching the 50%. They're also reaching the 50%, though they're also going across sectors. So they're not just rising as women's ministers or health ministers or education, but they're rising in finance, in infrastructure, in defense, in foreign affairs. So they're rising also sort of, we call these the glass walls. They're rising across sectors of government to make sure that there really is balance around all critical decisions.
And in the United States, of course, we've never had a woman as president of this country, but we certainly do now for the upcoming 2020 elections have a lot of women running for that office. We know, of course, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton came very close to that. Are you encouraged by the number of women now running?
I am encouraged by the number of women now running with a little bit of a hesitation. So I'm encouraged because we're at our highest in Congress now than we've been. And so we're at close to 25%, which still isn't 50, but we're getting there. I'm encouraged by the interest. I'm encouraged by the number of women, you know, at the local level. On the flip side, though, we've never had a president. We've never had a woman head the DOD either. And so in the United States, what I was saying before is it's still not just the presidency or Congress, but we're still not getting women, you know, heading all industries.
Well, as the world celebrates International Women's Day today, politics in Haiti continues to be largely male-dominated, especially in parliament. Few are in politics, even though the country's constitution calls for a 30% quota for women in all public offices. Jacqueline Belazaire has more for VOA.
In Haiti's parliament, the absence of female power brokers is clear. Just one of 30 senators is a woman. In the House of Representatives, just three out of 119 lawmakers are women. But Senators Dieudonne Luma Etienne says there is an effort on the way to change the political landscape with the help of men.
We are only four women lawmakers, but we represent a country full of women. Men should understand that when women vote for the national budget, there will be a better allocation to address women's issues, more for their mothers, wives, sisters, and daughters.
Senator Etienne says women and men should be seen as partners, not rivals, and has asked for more cooperation and action from her male colleagues. Representative Marie-Gladys Saint-Jean-Lundy is one of the three congresswomen in the lower chamber. She says the Constitution's gender quota calling for women to hold 30% of public offices doesn't reflect reality.
Our constitution, which has been amended, recommends in Article 18 equality of the sexes. It states that in the eyes of the law,
Men and women are equal. But the question of equality is fiction, not reality. When they were amending the 1987 Constitution, they felt the need to insert the notion of gender quota, which should, in theory, lead to the concept of parity. But in reality, the quota mandate remains a problem.
For Marie-Laurence Drusselaseg, the senior program manager at International IDEA in Haiti and former minister of Women Affairs and Gender, the gender quota mandate is essential. She says Haiti's strong patriarchal culture has contributed to the lack of female representation.
How did a country like Haiti, that previously had a feminine league of civil and social action, how did a country whose social structures depend on women, whether it be schools, banks, formal or informal sectors, women are present and take their responsibilities seriously, but when the laws are passed, they are missing. So gender quotas are a must.
Haiti has made some strides when it comes to women and politics. Herta Pascal Trouillot was the provisional president of Haiti for 11 months in 1990 and 1991. But with females making up 50.4% population, activists say far more progress is needed. Jacqueline Belizer, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, what's behind the Yellow Vests or Gilets Jaunes movement in France? What began as demonstrations against the rise in gasoline tax morphed into a rallying cry against French President Emmanuel Macron. We'll talk with regional analysts about the implications of the Gilets Jaunes movement. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. On our next Science Edition of Press Conference USA, we'll talk about Ebola, the current outbreak of the virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as well as a new medication that shows great promise in treating all three deadly strains of the Ebola virus. That's the Science Edition of Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Inter-Parliamentary Union finds more women around the world are winning seats in their national parliaments, with the best gains being made in countries that have well-designed quota systems. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IPU headquarters in Geneva.
The report finds women's representation in national parliaments rose by nearly 1% last year to 24.3%. This may seem a modest increase, but this figure indicates an ongoing upward trend of women's participation in politics since the 1995 World Women's Conference in Beijing. At that time, only 11% of women were in parliament. Their share has now more than doubled. IPU Secretary General Martin Chungong says he also is heartened by the greater diversity in the makeup of women's representation in parliament.
We are seeing more women of native origin. We're seeing more women of color coming into parliaments around the world. And if we take the United States, for instance, we saw a noticeable improvement in parliamentary diversity with Native Americans making their inroads into parliament, women of color increasing their share of parliamentary representation. And we even see the entry into parliament of two Muslim women.
Chungong notes the United States shot up in the global rankings of women parliamentarians from 137th position in 2017 to 79th place last year. The survey finds women now occupy about one quarter of all seats in both houses of Congress. As in previous years, Rwanda continues to hold the top spot in the rankings with more than 61% of women parliamentarians. Two other African countries, Namibia and South Africa, are in the top 10. The IPU finds 65th-ranked Djibouti made the most dramatic gains regionally and globally among lower and single chambers. It says the share of women in parliament rose from nearly 11% to more than 26%. The report says the Americas continue to lead all regions in terms of the average share of women in parliament with 30.6%. This compares to the Middle East and North Africa with the lowest regional average of slightly more than 18% female parliamentarians. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And to wrap up our International Women's Day show, it's a group of young women, Destiny's Child with Independent Woman.
Cameron D and Destiny, Charlie's Angels, come on.
This is Kim Lewis for International Edition.
I buy my own diamonds and I buy my own rings. Only ring your celly when I'm feeling lonely. When it's all over, please get up and leave. Question, tell me how you feel about this. Try to control me, boy, you get dismissed. Pay my own condo and I pay my own bills. Always 50-50 in relationships. The shoes on my